Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 338. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to the desert to Sin City, Lost Wages, Las Vegas, Nevada. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. We talked about Airbnb on the show just recently, I believe, in the episode about going to Serbia and Kosovo, and we talked about what a good alternative it is. Although Swedish roommates who rented out their apartment may not have had the best experience because they came back from a month-long vacation to find their home had been raided by the police because the renters had used it as a brothel, which I believe is off-brand for Airbnb. Speaking of things you don't want to be known for, United Airlines apparently just recently misplaced a 10-year-old girl flying alone. When I say misplaced, the person who was supposed to come and meet her at the plane did not show up, and when she asked flight attendants for some help or even to use a phone, they were apparently too busy to help for a while and she missed a connection. So the parents had no idea that she wasn't going to make her flight until she finally was able to call them. That's not the way the service is supposed to work. United issued an apology. And then speaking of apologies, Ryanair is trying to save some money, and what they're doing on their flights is they're trying to not have more fuel on the flights than they need, because that just has extra weight and makes you burn more fuel. But they ran into problems recently because of a thunderstorm caused some delays, and three Ryanair flights had to declare fuel Mayday emergencies in a single day. Perhaps a little more fuel. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Hunter Hillegas, who's come to talk to us about Las Vegas. Hunter is, among other things, the creator of the Vegas Mate iPhone app. Hunter, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I actually had invited someone else on. It's interesting. I invited Jen Leo on to come talk about Vegas because she loves Vegas so much. And she said, no, no, the person you've got to talk to is Hunter. He knows it better than I do.
Oh,
and
wow.
We have talked about Las Vegas on the Amateur Traveler before, although it's been, I want to say, 5 years since we did an episode on Las Vegas and possibly longer. And Vegas has a habit of changing.
Yes, indeed. Especially in the last 5 years, between the effects of the recession and some pretty high profile construction projects that finished and opened, the last 5 years have been incredibly impactful in terms of how the Las Vegas Strip has changed.
I think when we talked about Las Vegas 5 years ago, at that point, I think 7 of the 10 world's largest hotels were all in Vegas on the Las Vegas Strip.
Right.
And I think that's changed somewhat with a lot of the new casinos and hotels in Macau, for instance, and in some other places.
Yeah, I think that the numbers have shifted a bit. The Las Vegas Strip still has quite a few of the world's biggest hotels when you're counting by number of rooms. And in the last 5 years, they've actually added quite a few introductions of properties like City Center, which was a massive $10 billion-plus development.
And opened at absolutely the worst time.
And then the expansion of the Wynn property with their Encore Hotel, which was opened in that time period. And the Cosmopolitan, which was the most recent opening in Las Vegas and probably the last one that we're going to see for a while.
Now, one thing we should say is Vegas used to be a budget destination. You used to be able to go to Vegas, and because you were gambling, if we didn't count how much money you were going to lose at the craps table, then you could save a lot of money because the food was cheap and plentiful and bad, typically, back in the day. And now none of those things are true, except maybe plentiful.
Yeah, Vegas, for many, many years, it was very much driven by gambling revenue, and everything was sort of seen through that lens, especially when you were going to design and build a property. It was very much all about, well, how can we get people to come and spend time in our casino, and we'll build things around it to encourage that. And that has changed quite a bit over the past decade plus or so, where now, in as much as gambling revenue is perhaps less than 50% in some of these properties' cases, and in some cases even more tilted, and they're spending far much more time putting in very high-end restaurants, high-end shopping, pretty incredible hotel rooms, and entertainment shows like those from Cirque du Soleil and others that are just as impactful to the bottom line as the casino is. And that's not to say that casino gambling is not important for Las Vegas, because it is very important, but it's becoming part of a mix of options instead of the go-to and the only thing that the hotel operators care about.
So if someone hasn't been to Vegas before and you're trying to guide them into here's what you should see in Vegas, what's your sort of starting list with go here and do that?
That's a pretty expansive question. And I think part of it depends upon what kind of Vegas vacation you want to have. Mm-hmm. Because you'll see folks that want to come in to experience the restaurants and the shopping. There are obviously people that are really looking forward to spending some time in the casino, and they may do nothing else but that over the course of their trip. There are folks that are coming in to party, and they're going to nightclubs, which have become a very important part of Las Vegas nightlife. So part of it depends on sort of your traveler profile, but there definitely are certain things that I think would make the list almost no matter what your primary goal is. If you appreciate casinos and architecture, these are pretty amazing buildings. Even if you don't really gamble, it's pretty unique to find buildings of this scale in any other city. So for an example, let's talk about a property like Bellagio. Bellagio opened in 1998, and at the time, the goal was to build what Steve Wynn, the then owner and operator, would call the best hotel in the world. And obviously, it's arguable whether they accomplished that. And I think some people would say it's impossible to do that on that scale. Bellagio has about 4,000 rooms between two towers. But they tried, and they tried to do it the best way they know how. And so they created this massive property that's got a lake filled with automated robotic dancing fountains, a massive stage show from Cirque du Soleil, and luxury hotel rooms, not to mention a dozen or so food and dining outlets. And there's no other place in the world where you can have this many hotels of this scale all on one street. And Macau obviously has given Vegas a run for its money and may get there someday. But in terms of the density of it all, Las Vegas, I think, still takes the prize as far as it being pretty incredible. So to talk about some of the specifics, I think certain hotels are sort of can't-miss attractions. Bellagio would definitely be one.
And you mentioned the fountain show, which people line up for. I mean, this is something that people set their schedule around getting there to see that at least once.
Oh, absolutely. And the fountain show, which is out in front of the hotel, it's a free attraction. There are dancing fountains that are set to music. I would actually recommend, if you haven't seen the fountain show, try actually to get in to see it twice on your trip. And I would say once during the day.
And once at night. Mm-hmm.
Because it's a very different feeling to see it in those two environments. And it's pretty amazing. It's something that even this many years in, people put it on their can't miss list for stuff to see when they're in town. The fountain show famously was the third in a set of free attractions that Steve Wynn, who was the builder of the Bellagio and before that Treasure Island and before that the Mirage, part of his signature was to create these street-side spectacles. Mm-hmm. And first was this spouting volcano at the Mirage, which since then in the past few years has been renovated so that it's now quite a bit more impressive. So it's another attraction where you stand out on the street and you watch this incredible volcano, this light show with fire and sound effects, erupt nightly in front of the hotel. So that's something that's fun. I mean, it's not going to occupy much of your evening. It is fun to watch. The second attraction that he created was a pirate show at Treasure Island, which is right next door to the Mirage. Now, the interesting thing about this show was for years, it was on many people's list of stuff to see.
Right. Mm-hmm.
a little schlocky, but fun.
Now, my impression is they weren't necessarily going for complete historic accuracy with the pirate battle that goes on there.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised to see it at Disneyland or something like that.
Because of the scantily dressed pirates in particular, you're thinking?
The show has changed significantly. So the hotel went through an ownership change.
Oh, okay.
And the show was sort of redesigned. And so now the show is what they call the Sirens of TI, which is now, as you mentioned, are these scantily dressed, I guess they think they refer to themselves as like something between a what they would call a wench, which I'm sure is a great term, and a siren fighting these pirates. And yes, it is an excuse to put scantily clad women on a big fake pirate ship out in front of the hotel. But many people would agree is that the show has really dropped off the must-see list, because this new Sirens of TI version is just – sometimes things are so bad they're good. This is just so bad it's bad. It's really bad music. If you imagine pirates rapping, you've kind of got an idea of where they're going with this. It still draws a crowd, but if I had a few days to pick what I was going to do, I don't think I would put this at the top of my list.
Now, in terms of free curbside spectacle, I can't think of anything that's new in that category, though. So is there just one less than there used to be?
Yeah, more or less. I think to some degree, this strategy has changed. When Steve built Wynn Las Vegas, which was his hotel that opened in 2005, he's been cited many times saying he wanted to create attractions for people that were inside the hotel instead of outside the hotel. So he actually built a man-made mountain that surrounds the exterior of the hotel and creates some similar attractions, but they're only visible for people that are either staying at the hotel or inside the casino and watching from a bar or a restaurant.
Okay, interesting. And I'm sorry, which hotel is that?
Sorry, that's at Wynn Las Vegas.
Okay.
They're fun to see. If you go and eat at the SW Steakhouse, which is one of the restaurants there, it's got an outdoor patio with a view over a small private lake. It's got a fun light show with some animatronic dancing frogs and some other creatures. It is fun to see, but as far as the street side attractions, that seems to be going by the wayside as you get people to come into your hotel.
Well, one thing out in the summertime, that street side gets a little warm.
Indeed.
You were mentioning the scale. The one thing that's always fooled me with Las Vegas is walking around the city where you see that hotel over there and you know how big hotels are, so it can't be that far to walk to without realizing that you're looking at something that is a truly massive building and you're really much further away than you thought.
Yeah, they play a lot of scale tricks on purpose and to make these buildings look more approachable and more human scale. But yes, that's a common issue for folks that are wandering the strip. Things do look closer than they seem, especially if you're walking around in the summertime. Make sure that you're properly hydrated. It can be easily over 100 degrees on most days, sometimes 115 and even higher. Especially if you're out there and maybe having a cocktail or two, it's very easy to get dehydrated if you're going to be doing a lot of walking around. So you definitely want to make sure that you're drinking plenty of water, because it's a real easy way to ruin your vacation.
Sure. Do you have any tricks for getting around? I mean, I know there's the monorail, but it has limited connections, and if you drive, then you're way back in the back parking lot and it takes forever to get into the hotel. So
basically your options are to rent a car and drive, or driving in from nearby state like California to drive. And you know, fortunately, that most of the hotels do offer free valet parking. So you can park your car. There's also self-parking, but as you mentioned, oftentimes it's quite a hike from the parking garage to the casino. So your other options are taking a taxi cab. Las Vegas Strip is a fairly dense tourist corridor, so nothing is that far apart, but you still could easily spend $20 or $25 taking a cab from one end to the other. And so depending on your budget for your vacation, that could become cost prohibitive fairly quickly. There, the Las Vegas monorail, which runs sort of on the east side of the strip, it connects a fair number of properties, but it's not going to get you everywhere you want to go. And you still have the same problem in as much as the stations are way, way back at the back of these gigantic properties. So there's a fair amount of walking even if you use the monorail. Some properties have trams that connect them. So for instance, on the south end of the strip, you've got Mandalay Bay, Luxor, and Excalibur.
Right. Same ownership.
You'll see that in a few places. There's also one connecting Treasure Island and the Mirage. Personally, I like to walk. I think it's fun. The distance can be deceiving, so just make sure you know what you're getting yourself into when you're picking how you're going to get from place to place.
Excellent. Now, I interrupted you. You were going on the must-see no matter which your itinerary was.
Yeah, Yeah, so I think in terms of hotels, hotels in many ways are spectacles in and of themselves. So I would say Bellagio is definitely on the list. Caesar's Palace, I think mostly because it's iconic. It's one of the most well-known brands in casino gambling. And while the hotel itself has sort of been cobbled together over the years and extensively designed as some of the newer properties, it's still Caesar's Palace. And so it's worth spending some time just to see it. Beyond that, City Center, which is this complex that opened a few years ago. So this massive $10 billion complex, multiple hotels, probably mostly famous for going bankrupt and almost stopping its construction, did open to much fanfare. And it's notable mostly for its architecture. The company, MGM Resorts, that owns the complex, brought in some very high power architects to create these buildings. And they are very impressive looking. And so I definitely would recommend checking those out and getting to see those. Wynn Las Vegas and Encore are often cited as the top properties in Las Vegas. And Steve Wynn, who is the operator, is famous as sort of the, as Donald Trump is to Atlantic City, Steve Wynn is to Las Vegas, though. I think, I'm not sure if he would appreciate that comparison, but it's a very famous casino and hotel designer. And both of those properties are very beautiful. You'll find lots of fresh cut flowers inside, just some beautiful interior decor. And both of those would definitely be something I would recommend.
Is it fair to say, as Wynn has continued to build hotels, each one seems to get just a little more classy than the one before?
Yeah, I think so. And he's spoken about this in some of his interviews, and he's very much a believer in learning from the things that work and the things that don't. And I think he would say that in every case, he tries to make the next one a little bit better than the last one.
Okay.
We haven't talked at all yet about downtown, but there is Las Vegas outside of the Strip, and there are some fun places, especially depending on what you're looking for. And downtown Las Vegas, Fremont Street is sort of the main drag downtown, and it still retains a lot of that budget traveler mindset. So you'll find less expensive hotels, you'll find less expensive dining options, less expensive entertainment, and much smaller scale. These are casinos that you can easily walk down between a couple of city blocks is basically the extent of what you see down on Fremont Street. And if you are going down there, I would definitely recommend spending some time at the Golden Nugget. Was also originally a Wynn property and is definitely the nicest place downtown. Oh, and if you do go to the Golden Nugget, you can see the world's largest Golden Nugget.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay.
It's quite amazingly huge. Definitely, if you are downtown, make sure you see it. I believe it's called the Hand of Faith. But yeah, so definitely check that out.
And did you want to mention the light show as long as we're talking Fremont Street?
Fremont Street originally was just a normal thoroughfare like in any other city. But in the mid-90s, the casino owners down there decided to get together and they closed the street and built a giant canopy over the street and put in a light show. So if you can imagine, basically a giant curved screen that goes over the entire multi-block section of Fremont Street. And they do different performances on the screen. So they have themed shows where they combine music with visual effects onto the canopy. And it's fun to watch. All the casino lights dim, all the marquees turn off, and then this giant show goes on over your head. So it's almost impossible to miss if you're down there at night because they do run them fairly frequently. But make sure that you do get that out there and see one because it's one of the main calling cards for folks that are down on Fremont Street.
And my understanding is they just added a zip line because every city apparently in the U.S. needs a zip line now. So
it started as sort of a temporary thing, but it's been so popular that it's going to be permanent. And now you're hearing them people talking about adding zip lines on the Strip as well. So the zip line craze seems to be taking hold.
Okay. Zip line down the Strip sounds like there's a lot of scale there. Okay.
Some proposed plans for zip lines connecting the Luxor Pyramid to its neighbor next door at Excalibur.
Well, that would be unique.
Indeed. Who knows if those will ever get built, but they're at least considering those options. As far as if we're still talking about downtown, the Plaza Hotel recently went through a pretty significant renovation, and it's down there on the end of Fremont Street. Another place where you're going to find a lot of very cheap food and less expensive rooms. And another spot if you're looking for a nice quality room that isn't going to break the bank. So the Plaza is something to consider if you're in that category. And if you really want to see what Las Vegas was like 40 years ago, walk down Fremont to the El Cortez, which is almost like a time capsule in how it's been preserved. Low ceilings, lots of smoke. It's a flashback to the Las Vegas of old, even complete with coin slot machines. So recently, in recent years, all slot machines have gone to ticket-in, ticket-out technology, which basically means when you get paid, if you win a jackpot, say, you don't get a waterfall of coins. You get a little ticket that you then redeem for cash. So that has pretty much taken over all casinos in the United States. But at the El Cortez, you can still get your coin out slot machine. So if you want a blast from the past, go check out the El Cortez.
Now, you had mentioned if there were lots of different reasons to go to Vegas, that someone might go there as a shopper, a gambler, to party, or the three that you mentioned. What recommendations would you have for those three people? Where would you go if you wanted to shop, for instance?
Las Vegas has had a huge explosion in terms of retail options, especially, I would say, probably since the Forum Shops at Caesars Palace opened in the mid-90s, and definitely got kicked up a few more notches when Bellagio opened and brought some very high-end retailers to town. So if you're looking for anything from Prada to Armani to anything of its ilk, you'll find it in Las Vegas. So you can go and shop at some of the most high-end stores, and then there are, of course, shopping malls that will contain your average shopping and the like. And there are a couple of very notable places to do your shopping. So I mentioned a minute ago the Forum Shops. The Forum Shops are part of Caesars Palace, a giant mall that has got everything from an Apple store to a jeweler where you can buy $1 million necklace. So the Forum Shops, I think, would be on anybody's list for doing some retail therapy. across the street at the Venetian, there are the Grand Canal Shops, which is another mega mall. And one of the things you'll notice is that a lot of these stores, you'll find the Banana Republic in the Forum Shops, and then there's the Banana Republic across the street in the Grand Canal Shops. It's amazing that just as close together as these places are, they still can thrive having multiple outlets.
Right.
If you're looking for some very high-end retail, there are shops at Bellagio, a handful of shops like Prada and Armani. There's also high-end retail at Wynn. You'll find Chanel and Louis Vuitton and some other high-end retailers that you would sort of expect to be associated with those luxury brands. And then there are some other smaller shopping areas. There's a shopping area called Mandalay Place that connects Mandalay Bay to Luxor. And there's the Miracle Mile Shops, which are part of Planet Hollywood. And Miracle Mile is probably most noted for being more approachable retail, whereas some of these other shopping malls really focus on the very, very high-end retail. Miracle Mile is a good spot for, quote-unquote, more normal stores. If you're not looking to buy a super expensive handbag and you just want to do some casual shopping, Miracle Mile is also a good spot to check out.
Okay. And if I go to Las Vegas to gamble, do you have one or two casinos that stand out for you?
When picking a casino, I think a lot of it depends on your budget and how much you spend.
How much you can afford to lose.
Definitely a good way of looking at it. In terms of the niceness factor, the casinos at Wynn, Encore, and Bellagio are all very beautiful. They definitely tend to favor a higher-end player, though what you'll find is that even some of the nicest casinos will usually have games that are fairly accessible to pretty much anyone. They might not have a large number of those lower-limit games, but they'll usually have a handful. Beyond those, the casino at Aria, which is the Anchor Hotel at City Center, and if you're looking for some lower-end action, I would recommend checking out maybe the Luxor, Excalibur, MGM Grand, or maybe Bally's, which all will usually have some lower limits. And then just as we see higher prices on the Strip and often higher table limits, we also see lower prices and lower table limits downtown. So if you really want to stretch your gambling dollar, you're definitely going to get your best access to lower limit games down on Fremont Street.
And when you say lower limit, I'm a nickel slot guy. So what's your definition of lower limit?
Well, okay. So we Definitely. Usually we'll look at slot machines, which come anywhere from penny, nickel, quarter, dollar, and then up denominations. And then table games, where typically a lower limit on a table game might mean $1 to $5 a hand blackjack, which is harder and harharder to find in a casino like Wynn or Bellagio, but would be prevalent in a downtown casino. When it comes to slots, most every casino has penny and nickel slots. The latest trick with those slot machines is to give you a penny slot where you can play 500 pennies at once, which is more like a $5 slot. But they're very tricky in the way that they are able to get you to put in the most amount of money possible. But if you're looking for table games that are sort of in the under $10 a hand range, that would probably be considered a lower limit game versus 10 to 25 to, and then it goes up from there.
Okay. Now, what if I'm going to Las Vegas to party?
Yeah. So nightclubs have hugely successful and popular in Las Vegas, and there are a few places that stand out. Now, nightclubs are infamous for sort of being the flavor of the month. The place that's hot this week is dead the next week. And it's not right. quite that dramatic, but you definitely see the various places' fortunes rise and fall over the years as new places come online and the next big thing opens up. That said, there are a couple of very notable spots. One would be XS, which opened in, I think it was 2008. And it's this pretty massive complex that overlooks the pool. It's sort of integrated with the outdoor environment, so you can be dancing inside and then walk outside and go to a bar next to the swimming pool and play a couple hands of blackjack out there. Definitely a very, very hot spot. There is Marquee, which is at the Cosmopolitan, which is sort of the newest hotspot in town. Also taking, I think, cues from XS, an indoor-outdoor environment. You can go out and hang out by the pool. A multi-level indoor complex, so there's different rooms with different styles of music depending on what kind of music you're into. Those two are probably the hottest spots in town these days, though there are still very popular spots like Pure, which is at Caesar's Palace, The Bank, which is the nightclub at Bellagio, and many others. There was a time when you basically didn't open a casino without a nightclub, and if you didn't already have one, you were building one. And I think that slowed down a little bit, but there's still incredible moneymakers for these places. And so you'll find a nightclub in pretty much every major strip casino.
Now, in my experience, and tell me if this has changed, and I'm thinking of, for instance, you mentioned the nightclub at the Bellagio. The last time I was there, it was just ear-splittingly deafening music. Don't think about trying to talk to anybody. If you're talking, you're yelling in somebody's ear 3 inches away. Fog machines, a $300 bottle service, and house music.
Yes.
Is that pretty typical?
Yeah, it is pretty typical. It's a certain kind of activity, right? It's definitely not something that will appeal to everyone. It is definitely very much about loud music and dancing, and you have to like the music. And yes, it can be very, very expensive, especially if you want to reserve a table and get service. So it is not for everyone, but for the people that love it, they seem to really love it.
Okay. So if I had been to Las Vegas 5 years ago, let's say that somebody went as soon as we talked about an amateur traveler, where would you recommend they go back to? They've seen Las Vegas before. They've done the Fremont Street experience and some of the things that have been there forever. They've been to the Forum shops. But if you're going to go back to Las Vegas and you want to see what's new, we mentioned the new hotel, City Center. But what else would you recommend they see?
City Center was a big one. Encore also opened in that time period. And Encore doesn't have a lot to see in terms of public spaces. They're fairly small compared to a typical hotel casino, but it is still a very beautiful hotel. Cosmopolitan is the newest opened hotel on the Strip. It's located right next door to Bellagio, and it's got a reputation for being very hip and trendy. A lot of interesting new restaurants that didn't already exist in Las Vegas. One of the things you'd see again and again with other properties, especially if they were opened by a company that already had presence on the Strip, would you see sort of a recycling of some of these celebrity chefs. One of the nice things about the Cosmopolitan was bringing in a bunch of new restaurateurs onto the Strip, opening new restaurants that sort of mixed things up a little bit.
How about a new favorite and then an old standby?
In terms of new favorites, one of my new favorites is a restaurant at Cosmopolitan, and it's called China Poblano. And the chef's name is Jose Andres, and he's known, I think, to folks that pay attention to food. He's got restaurants in, I think, Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles, and other places. And it's an interesting spot because it's a marriage of Chinese food and Mexican food, which you would not ordinarily think would go together, but it is pretty amazing when you can get some great tacos and some noodles to go with them. It works amazingly well, and the food is very tasty. And while I wouldn't consider it a cheap budget restaurant, it's not as credit card crushingly terrible as some of the other restaurants on the strip. So I definitely recommend China Poblano. I think it's a lot of fun. Great new spot.
Okay. Old favorite.
As far as old favorites, Las Vegas is famous for steakhouses. It's another one of those things where pretty much every casino has to have a steakhouse. It's the unwritten law of casino design. There are some great ones. One of my favorites, I think we mentioned it a little bit earlier, is the SW Steakhouse at Wynn. Mm-hmm. If you are a meat lover, it is paradise. It is the steaks are just perfectly done. It's a very nice room with a nice view of the lagoon there. And typically great service. I've never had a bad meal there. So while it can be a little pricey, it is highly recommended.
Okay. And now here's your real challenge. Without leaving the strip, one place that you could eat on a budget.
There is actually quite a bit of opportunity for folks that don't want to break the bank on restaurants. And that can run the gamut from food court, McDonald's style thing, which may not be all that interesting, but if you really just need to get some food and don't want to pay a lot of money, that is always an option. The other thing to consider is that most casinos have a coffee shop of some kind, which in some cases, but not all, is open 24 hours and serves a wide array of food, everything from cheeseburgers to pancakes. And so those can often be a good option. I would recommend if you're looking for a inexpensive place to eat. One of the things we've seen is an explosion of gourmet hamburger places. And while gourmet may sound synonymous with expensive, they're usually pretty reasonable. And there's a great place to get a cheeseburger at the Mirage called BLT Burger, which is definitely a spot I would recommend to get a reasonably priced meal.
And so I'm picturing somewhere in the $7 to $15 range.
They definitely have stuff in that range. You could easily go over that with some of their crazy combinations, the black truffle this and the lobster that. But they definitely have some great quality burgers that are very reasonably priced.
Okay. And then you mentioned shows, and you mentioned one show by actually one company by name, and that was Cirque du Soleil. Last count, they had, what, 4 or 5 shows in Las Vegas?
Yeah, I think it's even more than that now. They have quite a few that sort of run the gamut from different price ranges and some different styles. The original Cirque show is called Mystère. It opened at Treasure Island. And the most recent Cirque show is a show called Viva Elvis, which actually is going to be closing at the end of the year. It hasn't performed very well financially, so it's going to be closing and replaced. But some of their most famous shows are O, which is at Bellagio, featured a pretty amazing water staging spectacular. There is Love, which is set to the music of the Beatles, and that's at the Mirage. And that's great. If you enjoy the music of the Beatles, it's just a lot of fun. They've got some great remixes and mashups, and it's an incredible sound system. So if you love the Beatles, Love is a great, great show. And Ka, which is at MGM Grand, this also amazing staging.
Yeah. I don't know how they did that show.
You won't believe that you're seeing it in front of you. And that's sort of a theme with Cirque du Soleil, but that's a great example of just the amazing things that they can do.
And all of these very gymnastic, acrobatic, done to some music and theme. I think of them as sort of athletic opera in some ways. Ka, I mean, there's something that's very style of opera in the sense of big show, big numbers, big ideas, but except with people swinging overhead. So,
you know, one of the reasons that Cirque has been so successful in Las Vegas is Las Vegas brings in a lot of non-English speaking visitors from the world, and the Cirque shows don't have any spoken dialogue. Mm-hmm. They're accessible to anyone. Even if you don't speak English, you can still buy a ticket to a Cirque show and enjoy it just like anybody else.
So If leaving them aside, is there another show that you would recommend?
Cirque and Cirque-like shows. There's a show at Wynn called Le Rêve, which is not produced by Cirque du Soleil, but very Cirque-esque. They have dominated entertainment for a long time, but there are some other good options. One show that has gotten a lot of positive response is a show with Garth Brooks, the country singer. Hmm. He's been doing weekends at Wynn over the past couple of years. And the amazing thing about that show is that people, even folks that are not country music fans, say it is an unbelievably great show. It's just him and a guitar, there's no band, and it's a relatively small theater. Tickets are expensive and they're hard to get, but they do it on a fairly regular basis. So if you were interested and wanted to plan your trip around it, it's one of those shows that people come out and they say, I can't believe how great that was.
And you mentioned expensive and hard to get. We should prepare people that all the shows we've named so far are expensive and that you probably ought to get tickets in advance.
So both of those things are true. Cirque du Soleil shows, I think the average is around $100, and sometimes it's far more than that. Mm. As far as when to get your tickets, there are places in Las Vegas that sell discount show tickets. So mm-hmm. if a show sold other seats for a given night, there are a couple of outlets that will sell them heavily discounted. You usually have to wait in a line to get access to those tickets, but there are a couple of those outlets. There's a business called Tickets for Tonight, or Tix for Tonight is how they usually spell it. And they have outlets at a couple spots on the Strip, fairly easy to find. And that's a great way to get tickets to a show. Now, that's more if you don't necessarily care what you see. You just know you want to see something because you don't necessarily have control over what you get your seats for. They may not have what you're looking for, but it often is a pretty significant discount. So if you're looking for show tickets and you want to find a way to do that without breaking the bank, that's definitely something to look at. But the Garth Brooks show, I think, is even more expensive. I mean, in the $250 range, it's quite an expensive show. And I think it's a very, very small theater. And if the news stories are to be believed, he commanded quite a hefty salary for these shows. So got to pay for Garth somehow.
What else should we talk about as we start to wind this down that before you go to Las Vegas, you should really know about?
One of the biggest things to keep in mind is the weather. It is very, very hot in the summer, but what many people don't realize is it gets very cold in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. If you're visiting in the winter months, you should definitely expect it to be 30s, 40s. It's not uncommon, especially at night. So make sure you bring some warm clothes. I see that a lot. People assume the desert will be hot. It's definitely not always true. Try not to do too much. There's so much to do in Las Vegas. If you kill yourself trying to get to everything, you can always come back. The city's going to be there forever. Try and pick a few things to do and just focus on having a good time. Don't necessarily try to cram everything in, because otherwise I think you'll die of exhaustion. There's just too much stuff.
Now, I'm interested in your opinion on two new things that have opened up. Now, traditionally, museums and Las Vegas have not gone well together. It tends to be a place where museums go to die. But there are two new ones that are getting a fair amount of play. Probably the one that's getting the most amount of press is the Gangster Museum, the Mob Museum. But then there's also starting to hear more about things going out on the Neon Boneyard.
The Mob Museum, it's located downtown. I think it's a tough sell unless you are very interested in that part of American history. A friend of mine was part of the curation process and was involved in getting some of the stuff they put into the museum. And so he and I talked about it at length, his impressions of the exhibit and what it was like. And I think if you are into mob stuff, it could be a great way to spend a couple of hours. But I think in general, it's not something I would put on a normal person's must-see list.
Okay.
Downtown, it's easy to get to. So if you have some time to kill, I don't think there's any reason to dissuade you, but I'm not sure if they've really hit their stride yet as far as being a must-see attraction. And as far as the Neon Museum, and one of the things that I love about Las Vegas are the neon signs. I mean, I just think they're a lot of fun. And over the years, there's been a ton of them that have been, you know, as casinos have closed and been imploded or certain attractions have been removed, these signs, in many cases, fortunately, have been preserved. And one of the things you can do is schedule a tour of what they call the Boneyard, which is basically this giant yard of these old signs where you can go and see some of these relics. And eventually, the plan is to put them into a more cohesive museum. But right now, most of the stuff is still out in the Boneyard. And it's a lot of fun, especially if you love history and you like to see that kind of thing. And it's one of those things that most people don't even know it exists or that you can do it. It's starting to become getting a little bit more mindshare, as you mentioned, but it's still not a super common part of a average person's trip. But I think it's a great way to spend some time. You'll have to take a taxi cab to get there, but it's not a long trip. It's real close to downtown, and it's a lot of fun, especially if you like that kind of thing. A great spot to take photos.
Okay. Now, a while back, this is a decade ago or so, Las Vegas tried to remake itself as a family-friendly vacation spot. We got in the New York with a roller coaster. We had the Star Trek experience going up at the Hilton. It seems like Las Vegas has given up on that, and now we're hearing more about topless pool parties being all the rage and those sort of things. That's the trend, is we're moving away from the family-friendly place?
Yeah, very much so. To the extent that sometimes when you ask people, by people I mean folks that are affiliated with marketing Las Vegas, the visitors already, casino executives, they'll even try to claim that they never tried to market to families. Of course, there was definitely a push to make it a family destination. That has fizzled, and they have very much gone backwards on that, to the point where I often recommend that people don't bring their kids to Las Vegas, just because there's fewer and fewer things to do on the Strip for families. There still is places like the Circus has an amusement park out back, but the number of things that you can do as a family, with especially with kids that are under 21, is dwindling quite a bit on the Strip. And so while it's not impossible to find stuff to do, for folks that remember that heyday of when everything was attempting to be family friendly, that's definitely not the case anymore. So it's definitely something to keep in mind if you're trying to plan a family vacation to Las Vegas.
Okay. If money were no object, where would you stay?
If money were no object, I would probably stay when Las Vegas has these incredible villas that overlook their golf course. We're talking about rooms that have their own private pools and multiple levels. They're sort of the height of luxury. They're so luxurious that actually Steve Wynn lives in one of them.
Okay.
And the trick with those is that the really great ones, often it doesn't matter if you're willing to pony up what they would charge you per night, because a lot of these places are reserved for casino customers only. You have to be willing to lose a bundle in the casino before they'll even offer one to you.
Okay. And then if you were a more normal person in a more normal budget, where would you recommend someone stay?
The thing about Las Vegas is that the prices dramatically differ depending on when you're looking at your trip. So there may be one weekend where a new hotel at Cosmopolitan may be in the $400 a night range, and then you look 4 days later during the week and it's $150 a night for the same room, or maybe even less.
Right.
So it really depends on when you pick and where you want to go.
And what conferences are in town. And
for hotels that I like, Cosmopolitan is notable because they have balconies in many of their rooms, which is a lot of fun to be able to walk out on a balcony and check out the lights of the Strip. Mm-hmm. Wynn and Encore are both nice, though oftentimes very expensive. So if you get a good deal, they're great spots. The Mirage is a great standby for a hotel that, when it was built, was designed to be at the top of the luxury heap and has been passed by some of its newer cousins, but still a very, very nice place. Recently renovated guest rooms and oftentimes very inexpensive. Treasure Island is another good spot in that sort of same vein. Nice rooms, inexpensive, good location. So there's just a lot of options in that middle tier.
You get a choice here, let's pretend, on which of the hotels on the Strip it's time to just blow it up. It's time to get rid of it and replace it with something else. Which one has seen its day and it's time to go away?
Well, I'm going to give a two-part answer to this. One is maybe cheating a little bit because it hasn't actually opened. There's a hotel that was constructed about 70% completed called the Fontainebleau, a Vegas version of the famous Miami Hotel.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Has never been finished. So it's sitting there down the street across from Circus, looking terribly ugly and blocking the view. And it doesn't look like it's going to be finished anytime soon. There's been talk of actually maybe dismantling it and selling the metal for scrap. That's how.
Okay.
So I would love to see that thing gone. But in terms of operating casinos, by far my least favorite place on the strip is Excalibur.
I just almost would have put money on that. Yeah, that's looked shabby for years.
Looks terrible. Every time I get in there, I get lost. I am not a fan.
Okay. Best day of the year to go to Las Vegas?
Oh, that's a great question. I think in terms of sort of weather-wise timing, the late spring and early fall are really great times because it's warm but not incredibly hot. So that's always a lot of fun. If you like the heat, the summer can be a good time to pay less than some other times parts of the year. Late fall, like November through January is, or maybe even into February, is some of the more expensive times to go. There are some really big conventions, big holidays like Thanksgiving and Christmas, which are pretty popular in Las Vegas. And then into the new year with Chinese New Year, which is a very, very big thing in Las Vegas. And then the Super Bowl, depending on when that sits. Those can all be very expensive times to go. If for my money, in terms of when I would love to go, I think early June is a great time. Late September is a great time. It's just the weather is perfect. You can walk outside without being too hot or too cold. And so that's, if it works out, I think that's always a great time to go.
Okay. Is there any side trip you would recommend to everybody who goes to Vegas?
The side trips for if you're staying in Las Vegas are mostly sort of outdoorsy. There's Red Rock, which is just outside the city. Really, really beautiful for if you want to do rock climbing or hiking, bike riding. This is a really great spot, which can be a little bit tough in the summertime when it's incredibly hot. But it is beautiful, very, very beautiful. There's the Hoover Dam, which a lot of people like to go see, which is about 45 minutes or so outside of town. Really easy to get to. So that's another common one. Everyone's favorite side trip should be the world's largest thermometer in Baker, California. So anyone that's driven from Los Angeles to Las Vegas has seen it. Or if you didn't see it, you may it may not be as impressive as they lead you to believe.
Excellent. We had mentioned at the beginning how many of the world's biggest hotels were in Vegas. I had a chance to look that up while you were talking. And of the top 20, 10 are in Vegas. Of the top 10, 5. And the first and the third largest hotel in the world, the largest being the Venetian and Palazzo complex. And the third, which used to be the largest hotel, is the MGM Grand.
Yeah, I sort of take issue with the Venetian Palazzo. I think they're cheating by combining them.
By combining the two? Excellent. Hunter, I've got two final questions for you. Actually, three. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Vegas.
One thing that you're seeing more and more of these days, and I don't know if I laugh with joy or with the disdain, but as you're walking the strip these days, you'll see characters dressed up as superheroes and Transformers and Captain Jack Sparrow. These are folks that you maybe used to see on Hollywood Boulevard out there that want to get your picture taken with them and maybe get a couple of dollars. It's become quite prevalent. And so now it's kind of like you get to go and watch and see who's got the best costume. And I will say that some of them do have some pretty impressive costumes.
I think I have a picture of two of my traveling companions with Elvis, so which seems much more Vegas appropriate.
Definitely.
Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Las Vegas, Nevada, when what?
When you have no idea what time of day it is.
Oh, yes. We didn't talk about that. Please elaborate on that for people who don't know what you're talking about.
One of the tenets of casino design was to dissuade people, to keep people gambling longer and longer. You don't necessarily want them looking at their watches, right? You don't want them to care about what they have to do later or when they have to do what. And so one of the things that you'll notice if you spend a lot of time in Las Vegas casinos, that it's very easy to lose track of time. There can, you can go for hours without seeing the outside, without seeing if the sun is up or not. And there are many, many stories, and I will plead the fifth to whether or not this has happened to me, where you walk outside and you thought it was nighttime and you can't believe that the sun is up again. I won't say that's happened to me, but it can happen.
Well, and not only is this the sort of land of perpetual twilight in the casinos, but in the shops, no clocks anywhere. And I have also noticed that it tends to be that if you have to walk through the casino to get to the front desk, which is almost a rule, that it doesn't tend to be a straight path.
Again, for many, many years, the sort of overriding principle of all of this design was the more time someone spends in the casino, the more money they're going to wager. And there have been some changes in that regard. You'll now see hotels where you can get to and from the hotel, a room, to a pool, to a front desk without having to go through the casino.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of gone hand in hand with the new emphasis on making money from non-casino amenities. But it is very, very common to have to snake your way through half the casino to get anywhere you want to go.
Excellent. And then last question, if you had to summarize Vegas in three words, what three words would you use?
Luxury, excitement, and hot.
Excellent. So Hunter, how can people take your Vegas knowledge home with them?
If you have an iPhone or an iPad, I have an app that you can get on the App Store called VegasMate, and it is a location-aware electronic travel guide that its aim is to make it easier for you to enjoy your vacation by giving you access to information about the hotels, restaurants, the shows, and whatnot. And you can find that on the App Store if you search for VegasMate, or if you go to VegasMate.com, all of the information about the app is there, along with a link to find it in the App Store.
And we'll put a link to both of those in the show notes at AmateurTraveler.com. Hunter Hillegas, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your obvious love for Las Vegas.
Oh, well, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
And then we're done. In news of the community, I heard from JT, who wrote just to say, I enjoy the podcast a great deal. I know it takes work and time, and I am very appreciative of all your effort. I found that your podcast the most interesting by way of guests and an infinitely likable host. So in summation, thanks. Well, I like infinitely likable. Well, that's very nice. Thank you very much. I also heard from Paul, who said, I just listened to the episode on Connecticut. A little behind, I know. I thought it was a great episode, especially because Groton was finally mentioned towards the end with regards to the sub base. There are three things I think that would make any trip to Connecticut better. One, the New England Air Museum at Bradley International Airport, which is just north of Hartford, to the Submarine Force Museum in Groton, including the USS Nautilus, the world's first nuclear submarine, and three, some sort of outdoor activity on the either Connecticut or the, and I want to say that this is the Thames River in Connecticut and the Thames in London, but someone correct me if I'm wrong. Great episode. Well, thanks, Paul. And those suggestions were left by Paul as a comment on the episode. So if you're going to Connecticut, remember to look there for those suggestions. And then speaking of suggestions, Rhea added some for the episode that we did on Oklahoma. And this is a while back, this episode 295 with Robert Reed from Lonely Planet. Thank you, Chris, for featuring Oklahoma. Mr. Reed did an excellent job of highlighting my home state, and indeed many of the areas discussed are places that I have never explored but hope to someday. If in the Oklahoma City area, I would like to suggest adding the Science Museum Oklahoma and the Oklahoma City Zoo to the list. These are essentially next door to each other and in the vicinity of the National Softball Hall of Fame. I did not know there was a National Softball Hall of Fame anywhere, let alone in Oklahoma. Remington Park and the Oklahoma State Firefighters Museum. If anyone will be around in September, there's an annual event in Oklahoma City called Septemberfest. The Oklahoma History Museum, the Harn Homestead, and the Governor's Mansion are available to the public for free. There are also other events going on outside of the buildings. If anyone fancies the Czech pastry known as the kolache, I'm going to guess. The Czech Festival is in Yukon, Oklahoma in October, and the Kolache Festival in Prague, Oklahoma in May. For the other times of the year, there's a little bakery called Kolache Kitchen in northern Oklahoma. The Chickasaw Tribe recently opened the Chickasaw Cultural Center in Sulphur, Oklahoma. I have not yet had a chance to go, but everyone that I have talked to who has gone said it is fabulous. And there are some other suggestions that Rhea left as well, but I'll let you read that whole thing as a comment on the Oklahoma episode. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. Feel free to leave a comment on this episode or send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @ChristWex or join the conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/amateurtraveler. And as always, thanks so much for listening.